We are continuing our Strong Women series today on KAXE, KBXE. Laura Connolly is joining us. She works in advocacy and organizational leadership. Specifically, she's worked with lots of different populations, but with victims of domestic violence and lots of other communities. She's a recipient of the Bush Fellowship. She's interested in and works with the idea of human-centered social design. Laura Connolly's back with us on KEXE.
Thank you. And she's like one of the coolest people I know on the face of the earth. She's also one of the coolest people on the face of the earth. I just want people to know that.
You're going to say it twice?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all set now.
Thanks, Laura, for being
Thank
here.
Thank you.
So let's talk about earlier. We've been doing a series of conversations, either one-on-ones with women or focus groups. And you and I have been doing some focus groups. And we did that earlier in February. And we heard from people in the Grand Rapids area that they felt like they missed out. They wanted to also have a focus group. So we just held one on Monday night. And we invited women over the airwaves. We asked some people that we knew. And we had a great group of women come in and gave them the space to talk and asked them questions. Now, let's start out with where we were coming from, what place we were starting with as we began this.
Can I ask you first, though, ages? Like, give us a reference of what the ages might have been in this group?
I'd say probably 30 to 60.
Okay.
Then, yeah, I don't know.
It wasn't quite as varied as some of the other groups that we've had, but I'd say within that range.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we came at it, and all of them, we've kind of been coming at it from this perspective of if we're committed to equality, equity for all people, are we making any headway in that direction?
Mm-hmm.
So we started out with this focus group asking women if they could think of a time that they had been treated differently in their workplace, specifically because they're women.
And I wonder if you could tell us, like, what does that mean that you get asked? That's not a question I, as a woman, get asked very often, just on a regular basis. So what did it elicit? What do you think that people feel when they get asked a question like that, women?
I think that initially it takes women a while to think about that because you don't get asked that. But part of that is why we have so many policies, procedures, workplaces that aren't working for the people who work there.
Okay, so let's talk about that because that definitely came up in a lot of times, you know, government politics feels really far away from us, but the actual policies that are made, even on a federal level, really affect our day-to-day life. So how did this idea come up about what those policies are, who they're meant for, and how they maybe aren't working in the world?
Sure. There was a ton of talk about policy in this group and legislation and what we can do about it. One of the big things that women talked about was like maternity leave, child-rearing policies. What do you do if you want to breastfeed, nurse your baby? Is there stuff like that within the workplace? There was tons of talk about childcare, affordable childcare, access to childcare.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about the kind of competing things that women hear, especially as they're raising their children, about how you should be breastfeeding, but then there isn't the space in your work life and what that feels like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, one woman was very articulate about that. She had talked about how she goes to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician is recommending that she nurse her baby for at least 6 months, which, you know, we're saying either way, give your baby a bottle, nurse your baby, whatever you need to do, we're going to support you. But then we know that nursing your baby is much more nutritional and better for the baby. The medical profession pushes this, but then you go to work. There's no place for you to do that. You don't get time to do that. So suddenly you feel like you're a bad mom.
And women aren't just machines. You can't just do that. There's a lot of things you need to be, eat a lot of food. You need to, you know, you need time. You need to be able to, in a healthy environment where that kind of thing can happen. So John, I wanted to give you an idea of like, so if someone's telling us their personal story that's really compelling, and then Laura pulls out of that, like what that means on a, why that is happening. So I wonder if you can kind of talk about that. Why is there this difference in our day-to-day life?
Well, I think that from a social perspective, you know, we're just socialized differently as a people. So women are going to have different lived experiences than the people who are making the decisions on their lives. Because the people in power right now primarily are white men. Mm-hmm. So unless you consult with the people directly whose lives are impacted by the decisions you're going to make, there's always going to be a gap between what they need and what you give them.
What was the very first question? What was the very first thing you said? You asked them a question. What was that question? Tell us a situation in your workplace where what?
Where you'd been treated differently, specifically because you are a woman.
Men could never be asked that question. I mean, I was stunned just by that question. And I bet some of the women were too. Well, not necessarily stunned, but like, holy cow, smokes.
And the way that, you know, a group like this gets together, I mean, they know we're going to be talking about some bigger things. It's hard to kind of get a conversation started. But, you know, one of the stories we heard had never been said out loud before.
Yeah, she told a story. She was the first female director of an organization that wasn't doing well when she took it over. And she made some decisions, but the men that were on the board of the organization that she worked for just totally kind of diminished her ability to decide. And she said to us, I've never told anybody that story except for to my husband. And this is, you know, 20 some years ago, I think she said.
So the men on the board just thought, she can't be doing this. She
got pulled them out of the trouble and then was relegated to, not exactly, but, you know, making the brownies for the next meeting kind of thing.
Yeah, which was, another woman had talked about that as well, so she's one of the only female leaders in, you know, a field that's dominated by male leaders. And a lot of times she gets asked to be the secretary or at the meetings or bring the bars.
Was every woman able to come up with an answer to that question?
Well,
is that not even a fair question? Because there wasn't time or something, but...
And it is in a, it's a open atmosphere. It is in a let's go around the room.
Right.
You talk,
yeah, your
you talk.
Turn, your turn.
Yeah, and it things sort of, you can kind of explain what a group is typically like, let alone what our group is like on Monday night on when you ask a question like that, who responds, how it goes.
Sure. So in focus groups, you know, you try to not be super controlling about the process because you really want people to give you whatever they're thinking. And then a lot of times what happens in women's group is that it's the first time that when women come together that they have this opportunity to kind of step back from their life and look at it. And they hear women telling stories and they realize, oh my gosh, that has happened to me. And so you try to just let some of that organically happen as much as possible.
What happens when somebody dominates the conversation? There's always somebody in a meeting that has to hear themselves talk all the time.
Yeah, that's a really common thing, and it shuts other people down. I think with women that happens a lot when you have a woman in the group who, you know, she's in a leadership role, she feels like she has gotten to that place. You know, she's tough, she's strong, she's worked hard. And so she comes at these discussions from that angle, which is great. We want women to be empowered and feel that. But at the same time, if that's your point of view, the other women in the group who are not in that place tend to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So you always have to be cautious to make room for people who that's not their experience, because that experience is actually quite rare.
What is the vibe like? What does it feel like? Is it an empowering kind of feeling when you're in there?
Yeah, it can be super empowering.
Yeah, I would say all of them we've been a part of are, I don't know how to explain it, because it can be empowering even when it's a difficult situation.
Sure.
Because I think it is, and you've already mentioned this, but I wish we would talk about it more. This idea, I know I have done this, and every woman has done this, where you think some problem, something that has stopped you from getting to the place you wanted to go, you think it's you and your own personal downfall.
Sure, absolutely. So part of this is, okay, I'll get a little theoretical here. When you live in a society that's organized like ours is, so it's hierarchically organized, there are people at the top, people at the bottom, people at the top have the power, then you have to tell this story that the people at the bottom are less than. Something is wrong with them. That's why they're there. And so the people at the bottom come to believe that to be true. And they think that the reasons why they aren't in these higher up positions or in positions of leadership is because they didn't try hard enough or something is fundamentally individually wrong with them. And it's not true.
That's Laura Connolly. It's the Strong Women series. We're talking about a focus group that happened earlier this week at the KEXC studios in Grand Rapids. I wonder if we can use one example we heard from, too, and how you helped us maybe frame this situation differently, because I think everyone has seen this, male or female. You're in a public place. You see someone interacting with their child, and it's in a way that feels too harsh. Doesn't feel like what you think a parent should be doing to a child or acting towards a child. And tell us more about that conversation we had.
Sure. So it was a woman talking about hearing and seeing another woman being physically and verbally abusive to her child. And she wanted to know, you know, like, what do you do in that situation? And so there's a couple things going on and stuff like that. So there are higher expectations on women in terms of how you treat your kids. If women are abusing their kids physically, emotionally, mentally, there's more stigma around that than men. But there's also this idea of supporting other women. So for me, when people talk about stuff like that, I'm always like, well, help her, support her, figure out what's going on with her. Something happened to her. She, you know, there are all these reasons that she is in that position that she doesn't need us to judge her more.
Something has happened before that moment.
Oh, definitely.
In the parking lot when she's yelling at a child.
Yeah. Whether it's her life experience or it's the circumstances of her life currently.
And so what, like that specific incident, what would you do? What would be a good response?
Well, I just think you, are you okay?
Yeah.
What do you need? Hmm. You know, is there anything I can do to help you out right now?
Yeah.
Okay, I ran into a situation that is similar but totally different, and I didn't know how to react. And if it was a man, I never thought about this. If it was a man, I was in a situation in a store, a large store, where the kid was crying nonstop, and mom did absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and so I'm sure there was a lot of judgment around that.
Yeah, I was judging.
Yeah,
I was heavy on the judging.
Right. And I think part of that is because there's a belief that she should be better. She should do better. She should know better. She's not mothering right.
Well, I was thinking to myself, well, maybe she's very wise. Maybe this is like a technique that works. Or maybe she wasn't wise and she doesn't know how to do it. So I was doing like the checklist judging, boom, 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 the whole time.
You didn't automatically, and I do this too, think about like, what has her day been like?
Yeah, I didn't.
What is this child like? What's it like on a daily level? You know what I mean? Because it's different when you see a child for 3 minutes and how they're acting. You don't know what it's like. You can jump to that this kid is probably totally fine and the mother's just doing something wrong rather than the real picture of what might be happening.
But yet there was a young woman who worked there, an older woman who worked there, who was infuriated and said, back when I was young, this is what we would have done. We'd have taken this kid outside and we'd have let him know the business. So it was interesting hearing a woman's perspective on that.
Sure.
And now and when I was done immediately, I thought, I wonder how I'd have reacted if it was a man doing that. To that, not doing anything to that child.
Did you do anything?
No, I didn't.
Talk to her?
Just gave me the, you know, anxiety, but I didn't. I would know what to do in the first scenario. I wouldn't know what to do in the second scenario because I would come off as a jerk.
Well, and I think, so here's some stuff that I try to run through in my mind when stuff like that is happening. Because obviously, like, if it's abusive, we don't want that going on. So we're not saying that. So I always kind of try to put things in, is this about a parenting style or is this about somebody's safety? And if it's about a parenting style, so be it.
Yeah. It's
like maybe you're a really unobtrusive parenting style. I feel like I kind of am with our kids. But then maybe it's about a safety issue where somebody's physical, mental, emotional well-being is in danger. Then you should intervene.
Laura, let's move back to the big issue that seemed to come of this, because we were planning to meet for an hour, but we said we certainly can stay longer, and we ended up staying a lot longer because there were some issues brought up that were really interesting, and the women in the group were moved to make some changes in our community. And so we're talking about the daycare issue as well as just mothers in employment. So tell us a little bit more about that, where that conversation kind of led to, because I seemed to me, in looking at you, you were delighted that how far that conversation went in that evening.
Yeah, it really landed on some action that women in the group wanted to take. And what they came up with was this idea of, you know, kind of holding our local policies and our government, local government policies up to the light. You know, are these working for women? Are they informed by women's lived experiences? How are they playing out in women's lives? And really digging into that and then trying to reorganize it so it works for women, which is huge.
We were happy to have one of the women who joined us was Native American, and we were really happy to have her perspective on a different society norm or a different sort of viewpoint. And that's going to lead us to probably the next focus group that we do. But can you tell us a little more about that, what that adds to a conversation like this? Because the rest of the women were white women.
Right. So it adds a couple of things. And she, this woman specifically named this, you know, she's like, I'm often the only Native American woman at groups, which there are a lot of reasons for that. And the fact that she continues to show up is very powerful, because that's what it's going to take is for, but they have to, people have to be offered the space. They have to be invited, and then they have to be listened to and honored for what they have to say and what they bring to the table. So, you know, she talked a lot about how traditionally women would be honored in the family and in the culture, but obviously through years of oppression and domination, that's gotten stripped away. But trying to bring that back is part of her process.
Mm-hmm. Was she proud to be that token person?
I wouldn't say she's proud to be it. I think that it troubles her on some level, because you look around the room and nobody looks like, you know, yeah, your people. Where are they?
Hmm. Well, we are almost out of time here, Laura. I just wonder, you asked an important question at the end. You asked, what would it look like for women to live in a society where we are valued? What did you hear? Why do you ask a question like that? Because that's another question we never get asked.
Well, because I think that we don't think about it in that way. We don't realize that the way that policies are written and the way that they play out are a manifestation of the value that we place on people. So when people are valued, all people, things look very differently. So the women talked about, you know, women would be seen as a resource. They would be active participants in all levels of decision making. Equal representation, or at least more representation than what we've historically seen. There would be no violence against women. There would be paid maternity leave.
Daycare at your employment.
Equal pay for equal work or equal value. No more sexual harassment. Women wouldn't be objectified in the media, therefore sexually harassed. There would be solidarity between women and between women and men. It'd be very different.
Our Strong Women series continues. It's made possible in part by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the Citizens of Minnesota. You can catch up on our previous conversations at our website, kexe.org. That's Laura Connolly. Any parting thoughts or anything about last Monday?
I just think, like, it's a huge thing that KXE is doing this in terms of really wanting to learn from and understand the lived experiences of women in northern Minnesota. It's huge. Good job.
Good job to you.